And that is the kicky music that means it's time once again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. And I'm here around the table with the Pop Culture Happy Hour crew. How's everybody?
Hey. Excellent.
I think we're chuffed to be here, Linda.
Chuffed. As Stephen is alluding to, I have returned from London where I enjoyed the royal wedding from the street.
Now, Linda, we agreed ahead of time that you were going to do this show entirely in your English accent.
We made no such agreement. And in fact, I can't do it now. It's like it was a magic moment created to make the kids, your kids laugh. But I can't do it now. I went through this whole explanation of exactly what titles William got as of when he got married, including Baron Carrickfergus, which is my favorite.
Oh, that's pretty good.
But, I believe it was Baron Carrickfergus.
Baron Carrickfergus.
That's pretty good.
There was about 10 minutes nice. Of that, and it worked on the kids because they're little.
And I kept yelling, more of that on the page, more
yeah,
of that on the page.
That's true. So anyway, I have returned, and you can read all about my adventures in London on the blog if you are so inclined. Meanwhile...
I heard Linda ate at Subway.
Are you going to tell all her secrets?
It was across from the hotel. I was very, very tired. I did not eat exclusively at Subway.
Right.
I had other things. I just had...
Where there is no Jared, there is only Nigel. And he lost a few stones.
And anyway, so before we get started, Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
And Trey Graham, what do you do at NPR?
I'm the movies editor for NPR.org.
And Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I am a writer and editor at NPR Music.
Well, I'm so glad that you could all be here and join me as I return to our shores. And, you know, we are taping this on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And... it is unavoidable. I think we have to acknowledge that, particularly in a building housing a news organization.
Of some kind.
Of some sort. But probably everywhere. It has been a little bit difficult over the last couple of days not to be absorbed in the news cycle. So as we have been free associating over the last couple of days, we got on the topic of sort of imagery of commandos and battles and such.
Did something happen?
And such things. And as we sort of tossed this topic around, one of the things that came up is that although there weren't women reportedly involved in this particular news cycle, and although there weren't any women involved in this particular raid, we got talking about how much more frequently you will now see women in movies and TV, at least. And I think perhaps...
And books, and perhaps
Glenn would say in comics of some sort.
Certainly would.
You will see more women with guns and are participating in battles. And we sort of got talking about how those images are changing. And so we talked about, for instance... I think we could agree, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
The Hunger Games.
Mm-hmm. She likes a taser. Hunger Games. Mm-hmm. She likes Soho.
AKA the book I read.
We
Steve is just going to keep bringing it up every time.
Well, yes, so I have read that book.
He's awfully proud.
Let's discuss it.
Oh, he's chuffed.
I'm chuffed.
We talked a little bit about the growing oeuvre of Angelina Jolie.
That's right, because it seems like it's true that Angelina Jolie, I was talking about this with Trey yesterday, is probably as much an action star now as probably Harrison Ford was in the time when he was making a bunch of action movies, when he had become, you know, the Tom Clancy guy.
When he was the president throwing people out of planes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. As
absolutely.
Steve.
Absolutely. Since this is something that Trey and I talked about, Trey, why don't you talk about a couple of the folks that were on your mind other than Angelina Jolie?
You see these characters occasionally in other media. They're not necessarily gigantic action stars, but they're strong and powerful women who are sort of given to us in ways that perhaps they weren't always given to us. I think it used to be that you would see women with opinions and backbones, but they would have to find ways to operate within the norms, within the constraints of polite society. I mean, if you think about the heroines of Jane Austen, mm-hmm. for instance, you had willful Elizabeth Bennet, you had the woman, forgive me, I can't remember her name, who's the heroine of Persuasion.
Mm-hmm.
But then those women get what they want, but they have to play the game.
Right.
Increasingly, I think in pop culture, you're seeing strong female figures who are either heroes or villains because they don't play the game. And I think you used to only get villains
right.
who didn't play the game,
right.
right, if they were women.
Right.
So you get not just Glenn Close's character in Damages, who is mm-hmm. sort of a villain, I think
right.
many people would say, at least
right.
I would think based
right.
on the first season.
Right.
But you also get Rose Byrne's character in Damages, who is absolutely insistent on sort of getting to the bottom of what's going on, right? And who breaks all kinds of rules. You also get women like the... I don't watch 24, but my understanding is that the president character played by Cherry Jones
mm-hmm.
is a kind of character we may not have seen a whole lot of until recently.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of others.
Well, the classic kick-butt woman, I guess, would be Buffy the Vampire Slayer. But
right.
she was created specifically, Joss Whedon has said, to redress old wrongs. She
right.
was created to be an answer to the dumb blonde who goes down the dark alleyway and gets attacked by monsters.
Right.
Joss Whedon wanted to flip it and make the monsters afraid of her. And Sydney from Alias, I guess, is another example of sort of flipping the trope.
Well, I want to throw out two examples before we get too much further. One mm-hmm. being Linda Hamilton in The Terminator.
Absolutely.
And Sigourney Weaver in Alien.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yes. Great
right.
point.
So, I mean,
it's not like there have never been.
None of us are saying this has never happened
right.
in movies or pop culture until now all of a sudden there is this flood of strong heroines.
Right.
There have been strong kick-butt gunslinging heroines
right.
in pop culture before.
And there were warrior women in ancient mythology. It's mm-hmm. not that there never were any warrior women, and it's not.
No, Sigourney Weaver was first.
If you go back, people point to the history of women in the military of various countries at various times in history. They have been part of military operations in different capacities, depending on the society and the culture where you're talking about. But what we were talking about was whether there's any sort of momentum as far as reaching a point where there's going to be any more even-handedness in the presentation of characters, because we can sit here and talk about, oh, there's this one and this one and this one, but you're still going to go out and see summer action movies, which are still overwhelmingly going to be populated with men. And a lot
right.
of the time, if there are women, there will be one,
right?
In an ensemble cast of, you know, people with guns, there will be one. So I think what we were talking about is whether there is any sort of sticking power to any of this, or whether this is just the flapping... You know, the
right.
flapping in the wind.
Is it just
of...
the swing of a pendulum, or is it reflective of some kind of change in the culture at large?
Right, right. Well, Glenn, you sort of deal with different media in some ways than mm-hmm. we do. From your other travels, what is your sense of this?
Well, comics, historically, you know, there's been a lot of cheesecake in comics.
Right.
They're
right.
known for that. But lately, I would venture to say that they're kind of leading the way. There are characters in a series called Queen and Country. The character of Tara Chase is mm-hmm. a British spy. It's a great series by Greg Rucka, and she is not just a strong female character. She is a strong female character. She is flawed.
Right.
She is real. She's somebody that you empathize with. Same thing with a character called Carrie Stetko in another Greg Rucka book called Whiteout. Same thing with several characters in a series by Brian K. Vaughan called Why the Last Man. There is an evolution in comics. Now, there's still cheesecake. There's always going to be cheesecake. But there's an evolution toward... addressing the roundedness. Not the roundedness. But the
There's
roundedness.
Always been plenty of roundedness in
not
women.
The moundedness.
I was going to say. In comics, as in Angelina Jolie movies, it used to be that female action heroes only came with boob windows.
Exactly.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. I think that's true. And one of the things that I think is so interesting about the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo books is that she is not only... powerful and carries her own weapons and does her own damage at times. But she's also not very likable. She's not very warm. Mm-hmm. She doesn't uncover a nurturing side, you know.
Right. Mm-hmm.
She's very emotionally remote.
Right.
And there are definitely issues with gender politics in those books that I would take issue with. They are built around this male hero who all women seem to be desperate to sleep
right.
with for some reason that is kind, then, you know, they are unable to forget him, and there's a little wish fulfillment, I think, going on there.
And his name is Fleeg Marson.
I think there is a little wish fulfillment going on there, just as there often is in many kinds of fictional work.
As important it is to redress the sins of the past, when you see a character like Jane Tennyson in the British series Prime Suspect, played by Helen Mirren... She is a strong female character, but again, she is flawed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important, because if you're just creating a kick-butt female to answer the fact that females have been relegated to the side, you're still objectifying. You're still flattening, as it were, the character. Can't get away from it. And I think that's doing just as much a disservice.
Right. So it wouldn't necessarily be a great victory if, you know, if you had a lot of women making Tomb Raider.
Or Sucker Punch, for example.
That's a great point. That's a great point. Because I think Sucker Punch, a lot of people sort of thought, you know, Sucker Punch is going to be this kind of mold-breaking thing. And then people wound up being really disappointed in
pretty moldy.
That it was moldy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That it was moldy. Because it's very difficult to find that balance between what is breaking stereotypes and what's just kind of playing off of them.
I have another point about a show called Justified, which I love. Mm. I love this show. Season one, I loved. Season two, I think, took it to the proverbial another level. And I think an important point is that in the show Justified, you very rarely get through an entire show without having a scene where a bunch of dudes point their 45 caliber phalluses at each other for some kind of a standoff.
Right.
In the second season, they added two female characters. Mags Bennett, who's sort of yes, she's evil, fine, she's the villain, but she's played by Margo Martindale, and she is a fantastic, rich, complex character.
The amazing Margo Martindale,
the amazing,
I should say, has been kicking around in all sorts of things for many, many years, and if you see her picture, you will say, oh, her.
I had every intention of living a simple life, raising my boys, keeping house. And Purpose got killed, and I accepted this role, did what I had to do for my family. I may not have lived the life I wanted, but I'll be damned if my grandchildren are going to live it the same way. I got Dole's boys a path out of this holler. And nothing is more important to me than that.
And somebody you may not know, she plays Loretta McCready, a very young girl named Caitlin Dever, I think is how you pronounce that last name, and she's fantastic, and the addition of these two female characters who were not relegated to the sort of being the love interest or the ex-love interest of the main guy really adds a level of dimension to the show that, you know, I think that's another role that women can play. They can make a show which is sort of one-dimensional, fascinating, but one-dimensional into a three-dimensional show.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm always somewhat torn about arguing for how great it is to have more women on screen, on television and movies, shooting people, because obviously that's not my height of culture. And yet I find myself weirdly encouraged by the idea that it's possible, that whatever you decide to do with them, it's not because people assume you can't do that. You can't use them that way. You can't put them in those kinds of situations because nobody will watch it. And obviously we've talked about Buffy, and it's not like it's a completely new thing. But, you know, one of the things that occurred to me is we have talked before about young adult fiction and changes in young adult fiction. And if you sort of compare the current Hunger Games phenomenon to the Twilight phenomenon, it's amazing
how different. That's a huge leap.
And there are so many parallels. There are love triangles in both. There are, you know, bloody battles in both. But you have in one, in Twilight, you have someone who to me has always been an infuriatingly passive,
inert,
dull sort of girl. And in the other, you have this really driven, really self-sufficient, genuinely independent-minded girl. And it's interesting to see that evolution. You know,
a character with a clear sense of agency. So.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, and they play up in that character, in the Katniss character, not only like a sense of nobility and heroism, but also a certain darkness of character, and not like a traditionally, you know, warm hero, you know, sort of a darkly self-sufficient hero.
Yeah,
and somebody
who's
not so supposed to look like Sarah Michelle Gellar. Right. Even though, of course, they're casting Jennifer Lawrence, who is a pretty blonde girl. There's an enormous amount riding on the quality of those Hunger Games movies. I mean, they're sort of expected to be sort of the new Harry Potter-style mega-franchise.
Right.
If you get that right, you are creating sort of a heroine for generations of girls.
You know,
I'm enormously hopeful as the father of a daughter that those movies get my daughter even more interested in kicking ass than she already was.
You mentioned Jennifer Lawrence. The other interesting thing about Jennifer Lawrence is that last year she was nominated for an Academy Award for Winter's Bone.
Yeah, I don't mean to suggest that she always plays glamour puss.
Right, exactly. Because in that movie, I think although it's less It's less about loud battles and more about quiet battles.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And futility and suffering.
Right. And futility right.
and
such.
It's about not being passive, and you can kick right. butt without kicking physical butt. And yeah. to right. get back to Trey's point about working outside the system, challenging the system, Flora Post in the movie and book Cold Comfort Farm, this is a woman who comes into a situation and totally upsets it just by the force of her will. So she doesn't have to be a woman. She is just somebody who kind of says, the way this is, doesn't work.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to mention, and I thought of this when Stephen mentioned his daughter, is that one of my favorite movies that has come out recently that had a largely female ensemble cast was Whip It, which was the roller derby
movie. Oh, yeah,
movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was, I thought, really good and really underappreciated in some ways, and it did not do well at all, despite having, you know, it had Ellen Page in it, who was a star coming off of Juno, and it
Drew
was
Barrymore.
Made by, it was
directed by
Drew Barrymore, who was in it. And, oh, I think it's so great. And I was so disappointed. And the part of the problem in trying to create the kind of momentum that we're talking about is you get all these expectations around an individual movie. And if it doesn't do well, people decide, you know, this is what it's about. What it's about is not enough people will go see movies about an ensemble cast.
About roller derby.
Right.
about an ensemble cast of women. Open and so, and whereas you can have, five in a row comic book movies flop and nobody concludes, for all time, we should stop trying.
Right.
Right. It's interesting about Whip It, though. I share your tremendous appreciation for Whip It, which I think is great fun and a movie I immediately thought, I can't wait for, you know, my kids to see that when they're a little bit older.
When they're 15.
When they're, you know, when they're 13, 14, 15.
Yeah. Right.
I do think that is a future cult hit. Well, we're going to be talking shortly about sort of the movies that we, you know, that we always watch whenever we see them on cable.
Spoiler.
Not to spoil what is coming in the remainder of this episode, but I think that's a movie that, assuming in the future that people are still able to sort of stumble across movies on cable, that we don't get all of our movies pre-ordered on
Netflix.
I think
you're right. That's the kind of movie that, if you discover that as an adolescent girl,
yeah,
or as a you know, just pre-adolescent girl who's, you know, sort of beginning to wonder how she's going to find her place in the world, you're going to love that a lot.
There's no real element of fantasy to that movie, with the exception of you don't generally see women who are as tiny as Ellen Page in that position in roller derby. Mm. But that is, it is a very realistic.
I would actually argue I would argue quite the opposite. I think it is, in some ways, it is exactly like Harry Potter, in that it's a story about someone who is not in a very happy place, who discovers another place and a secret talent, and is taken in there.
That's a great point. I think that's a great point.
And, yeah, but my daughter is more and my daughter is more be, likely it, to be a roller derby star than my son is to be a magician.
Sure, sure. Fair enough. All
right. That is true. Okay, so as we wrap up, what does it take to make all of this into something that actually advances the dialogue, the discussion, the cultural discussion?
Story and character.
Mm-hmm. Right. But how does that get done? Like, how does that get accomplished? Because my question is, you know,
storytellers and actresses.
Yeah, but they're out there. They've always existed. And the question is, how do you translate that into making more projects? And
And they've always existed, but they're fewer and further between, right? I mean, and it's harder for them to make a mark in a community that is still, to this day, dominated by men. That is, if I understand it correctly, one of the major arguments and themes and learnings from Tina Fey's book, right?
Well, I think one thing that it's going to take is more giant hits.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
I said hits.
Plural.
Yes! No, but I mean, a movie like The Hunger Games should be, assuming it is a good movie, assuming it all these things, if that movie is a gigantic hit, I think you will see more large-scale discussions that people will en masse go see movies with sort of realistic butt-kicking heroines who are not just women in bustiers with big guns.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we should be licensed.
So to speak.
We should be licensed that when studio producers see a movie like The Golden Compass, which featured a young girl flopped badly, they shouldn't, if they conclude, well, it flopped because it had a young girl as the lead, we should be able to go up and hit them.
Yes.
Because it flopped because it was a lousy, long movie based on a great book.
Well,
and lots of movies flop. You can have a flop of any sort. Mm-hmm. You can have Judd Apatow making a movie with Adam Sandler that didn't do well. Didn't make everybody say, well, we've got to stop making Adam Sandler movies because clearly nobody wants that anymore. Mm-hmm. that's the problem with not centering the conversation around any one movie too much.
Yeah.
And the problem is, like Trey said, these projects are fewer and farther between, which means everyone gets weighted down with all this baggage of this is the one that we're going to use to prove the point about whether you can make a movie like this or not.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to know what's made $500 million worldwide as of middle of April?
What?
Tangled.
Oh, we
but
like
that's,
that one.
But that's because they didn't call it Rapunzel.
Right.
That's because they made it, you know, more appealing.
They made
appealing
it about a boy.
They made it more appealing to boys, right? Right? Linda loves that
description. Yeah,
see, I really do. See Rant. Yeah. Published on Monkey See.
Turns out you cannot get boys to watch iCarly. Linda has a point that Linda has made on her blog.
We do say that sarcastically. The boys in my life like iCarly, so yes. What
yes,
can
they
you
do.
Say?
We like iCarly, all right.
Well, so if you have thoughts about women heroes, we're still sort of having this discussion, and we've been kind of kicking this around, and I always like a good gender politics conversation, so feel free to come to the blog at Monkey See or come to our Facebook page, which is at facebook.com/PCHH, and tell us all about the heroes. And again, I'm sort of curious about people's thoughts about whether this is actually changing, or are we just noticing a couple of them and it's just a big old trend swinging back and forth that will eventually just...
As we said during this discussion, this is not an entirely new thing.
Yes. Oh, of course not.
Butt-kicking heroines throughout history.
I refer you to Boadicea.
Okay.
Well, that comes as no surprise to anyone who knows anything about German art songs. Anyway, okay, so as Stephen teased, we got talking about the phenomenon of seeing a movie go by on TV, perhaps a movie, well, certainly a movie you've seen, but perhaps a movie you've seen many times. Perhaps, this is always my favorite, a movie you own on DVD and do not usually watch. And yet, if it comes by on TV, you're like, okay, I got to watch that. And it tends to be a very special kind of movie. It's not necessarily the greatest movie. It's not like, oh, this is the best movie I've ever seen in my entire life, so I'm going to sit down and watch. It's always like, oh, hey, it's Just One of the Guys. Seriously, Just One of the Guys
is
not my one pick, but you would be surprised how many people there are, I would say especially women, who came of age around the time that Just One of the Guys, which is this movie about this girl, and she dresses up as a boy and to go to school, and because she can't get the journalism teacher doesn't take her seriously, so she dresses up as a boy, and then she, of course, meets a guy who she becomes friends with. And
this is actually not narrowing this movie down.
No, it's
I feel like that plot has been done like a trillion times.
47 times by Shakespeare alone.
No, this is a specific one.
This movie
Glenn
exists.
Knows what I'm talking
this
about.
Movie exists on Comedy Central at 10 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday.
That's
exactly when this movie
is. It's one of those movies that I would guess, and I don't know for sure whether this is true, but I would guess that about 98% of the money it has made has been long after its theatrical release.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because even if it only makes like 2 cents every time it's on Comedy Central, it is racking up those pennies like you would not believe. Because every time that I have heard a discussion similar to this about sort of movies you go back to despite the fact that it's weirdly not that good, this movie comes up every single time. I'm going to call this The Movies You Can't Not Watch. Glenn, why don't you serve up a movie you can't not watch?
All right, Mike, hit me one time.
Lilo Dallas Multipass.
Yeah.
Multipass.
Multipass. You know this multipass. Lilo Dallas, my wife. We're newlyweds. Just met.
Multipass.
You know how it is. Bump into each other. Sparks happen. Yeah, she knows it's a multipass. Yeah, anyway, we're in love.
Okay. That is a clip from a film that I do not particularly like, and I certainly don't own. That is a clip from The Fifth Element.
Yeah.
The Luc Besson film.
Luc Besson?
Which stars a gigantic blue opera singer.
Exactly. Yeah.
Don't want to give anything away, but I think that The Fifth Element might be love.
It stars Bruce Willis with yellow hair and exactly matching yellow tank top because the costumes of this film were designed by Jean-Paul Gaultier. In fact, everything about the surface level of this film distracts you from the story level of this film, which is pretty much a good thing because the story's pretty dumb.
Mm-hmm.
It is a bright, shiny, plastic-looking film.
Mm-hmm.
It looks
What's
pretty.
It about?
I don't know.
I have no idea what this was just about to say.
Who remembers?
I've seen it. I have no idea.
See, this is the thing. And it bears a passing story topic resemblance to Blade Runner, but if, mm-hmm. it's like if Blade Runner was on Paxil, where everything was happy and bright. Mm. The thing that I think draws me into this film every time is that the rhythms of it, the narrative rhythms, the dialogue rhythms are foreign, deeply foreign. They're definitely Frenchy.
With lots of techno on the soundtrack.
A lot of techno on the soundtrack. Mm. The act breaks come at weird places. You can't really see them coming. But as I say, everything on the surface of this film distracts. Chris Tucker, playing a sort of interplanetary DJ, is deeply annoying.
Here he is, the one and only winner of the Gemini Crockett Contest. This boy is fueled like fire. So start melting, ladies, because the boy is hotter than hot. He's hot, hot, hot. Pop it, D-Man.
Hi.
Unbelievable!
And Gary Oldman is Gary Oldmaning around, as is his wont. Mm-hmm. He is wearing on his head a Tupperware Hi-Li scoop for no particular reason.
It is very strange.
It is very strange. So, but again, this film draws me in every time, even though I don't particularly enjoy it. And, you know, if I did particularly like any one thing, this is the thing that mystifies me about this whole phenomenon. If I did love this film and had it on DVD or on demand, I wouldn't seek it out.
Yeah.
But I just plant myself on the couch when
but
this
thing
comes
on. When you stumble across it, there it is.
There it is.
You can't not watch.
And all its dumpth.
Well, all right, Trey Graham, give me a movie you can't not watch.
I misunderstood the challenge a little bit. I didn't understand that it wasn't supposed to be a very good movie. So
it can be a great movie.
Okay, my movie actually has substance. This actually happened the last time I went to visit my family, and you know, I only had 3 days with my family, and yet I found myself when I heard the overture to this movie. I was drawn to the television and sat there. No, it is not The Sound of Music. It is December in France, and a kind and loving family has gathered for the holiday, and the father turns to the rest of them and says, "What shall we hang, the holly or each other?" Anybody? Nobody? Really?
Jaws.
No, it's The Lion in Winter.
Sure.
It is longish. It is grand. It's from 1968. Earned a nice little Oscar haul for the score and for the leading lady, and maybe one or two others. It was the film debut of both Anthony Hopkins and Timothy Dalton. And, of course, Catherine Hepburn is Eleanor of Aquitaine, the richest and most powerful woman of her age, the queen, in turn, of both France and England, and the woman who, in this movie, describes the experience of accompanying her first husband on the Crusades by saying,
"I dressed my maids as Amazons and rode bare-breasted halfway to Damascus. Louis had a seizure, and I damn near died of windburn. But the troops were dazzled."
But the troops were dazzled.
I can see why you like it, considering how much you're enjoying.
It is exactly the sort of snappish, clipped, very modern diction of the script that sort of makes the thing so delicious when you pair it with the grandeur of Henry II, the man who killed Thomas à Becket, is played by Peter O'Toole, and the woman who gave birth to Richard the Lionheart, and who, you know, quite literally owned a gigantic chunk of Europe. It's kind of like Dynasty with royals instead of nouveau riche Denver oil trash, and it is completely irresistible. Hepburn and O'Toole give these performances that are just gigantic, right? They are chewing scenery left and right, but at the same time, they are always, in one way or another, grounded. It would not work at all if it was just the jokes or just the costume drama or just the gigantic performances. They manage to humanize the characters, and just often enough, one of them will carve a real slice off of the other, and you will feel it. And that, I think, is what takes it from entertaining to actually great movie.
Very good.
Now, if you want to talk about something that is less successful as a piece of storytelling, a piece of filmmaking, but which I will still sit down and watch if I see a snippet of it, you know, the gigantic, messy epic that is Cleopatra.
Oh, and that takes a while.
That takes a while. That has an intermission, as I recall.
Clear your day.
Very good. Good choice. Stephen Thompson.
I've got two. One that immediately sprang to mind when the idea came up is Pulp Fiction, where every time I'm flipping channels, hit Pulp Fiction, wherever it is in the movie, it sort of stays on. Mm-hmm. And so I've seen the end of Pulp Fiction like 65 times and the beginning of Pulp Fiction about 4. Mm-hmm. So that's one that jumps out. But to me, that's sort of an obvious, you know, like, let's recommend Pulp Fiction.
Right.
Yeah, I hear that's good.
It's a good movie. The one that I have to say is I've seen this movie pop up literally in worst movies of all time lists. I see why people don't respond to it, but for whatever reason, it's sort of, I find it this sort of warm knockabout movie. I believe
You're talking about Battlefield Earth, right?
I am talking about a little movie called Battlefield Earth, Red Brain. I had a talking John Travolta action figure in my office at The Onion, and Nathan Rabin and I would always try to push it until he would say, Red Brain, so we could have it yell at each other.
Well, what is it really?
Okay, the movie is Dan in Real Life.
Oh, I love that movie.
And like I said, I've seen it pop up in, like, most hated movie of all time lists. I can't remember where I've seen that. But
that's crazy. I like that movie.
I think it's the combination of sort of, you know, rich, white New England family made of a motley band of wacky misfits.
And we should explain
learns
that
to
this,
live in love. And it includes Dane Cook. And there
sure
are and there are people who have, like, intense, reflexive hatred of Dane Cook.
Teeth grinding
hatred of Dane Cook. First of all, I think Dane Cook is perfectly cast in this movie.
In that particular role,
that's exactly the right role for Dane Cook.
Because he plays sort of the sort of lovably douche. The sort of lovably douchey brother of Steve Carell, who is the sort of warm,
he's an advice column. On paper, there are so many reasons to hate this guy. I see Glenn dying inside. It's a nice movie. He's an advice columnist who's got to learn to take a little bit of advice of his own.
And he's got daughters.
And he's got three daughters. And he's a widower. And there's so many barfy things about this movie.
And then he meets Juliette Binoche.
But she's already dating Dane Cook. And the whole thing is sort of plays out in like a lovable resort town in Maine or whatever. You know, in New England.
You have not yet turned the corner.
This is the thing. Yeah. On paper, it's just sort of gross. But part of it is that I find Steve Carell enormously winning. I'm sure he's not great in everything he's been in, but this taps into why he's so good on The Office and why The Office is so reliant on Steve Carell, not just being a jerk or not just being a bad boss or not just being an oaf. Why you want Michael Scott to fall in love is that Steve Carell, in addition to being funny, is also capable of accessing this very vulnerable place and this warm place where you ultimately want him to find love and happiness. And for whatever reason, it's also got these really nice Sandra Lerca songs in it, where it kind of brings out the best of Sandra Lerca's music. He's kind of ultimately, in a way, the narrator, you know, because it's got so many of his songs in it. I tend to love movies that do that, sort of the way that The Graduate has, you know, Simon and Garfunkel songs through it, or whatever. Or Rocket Science has Eve Barzelay songs running through it.
Right.
Ultimately, I like Dan in Real Life, and when I see it on TV, I end up watching the whole thing.
I like that pick.
The trait you talk about with Steve Carell, his inner lovableness, has been a part of him ever since he played, remember Produce Pete on the old Daily Show?
Sure!
There was this character, the way he would screw up and the way you would just sort of, oh, poor guy. And he gets so angry at himself. And it's always been a part of him.
But if you hate that movie, you will hate it so much.
It's true. Some people hate the lovely Sandra Lerca songs, too.
There's a twee factor in that movie.
There is a twee factor. You have to get past the twee factor. And I will make one more quick pick in addition to the cross-dressing comedy I mentioned earlier. I will watch While You Were Sleeping anytime it is on. Sandra Bullock and Bill Pullman.
Bill Pullman.
That's right. I got it right. And Peter Gallagher. I have seen it 400 billion times. It's really funny. And it's sort of, this is the movie that Sandra Bullock made a whole career really
is her
going,
boyfriend,
trying
is
to
one
find
one boyfriend
this.
Comatose
yes.
and then she meets somebody else?
Yes. His brother.
His yes. brother?
Yes. Well, and the coma guy isn't really her boyfriend. She just pretends he's her boyfriend. It's very complicated. It's very complicated. But Ali Walker plays the girlfriend of the coma guy. It's very complicated. And she's really
funny.
Wait,
so the coma guy has a girlfriend in addition. So he's two-timing Sandra Bullock.
It's very complicated.
While in a coma.
It's very tricky. You just have to see it. I'm going to make you watch it. I can't believe I've never made you watch it. We're doing that. Anyway.
I got two more. They're very quick clips, which is fitting because it occurred to me as I was coming up with this list that for these next two films, the reason I settle in on the couch is not because I want to see the whole film, but because I'm waiting for one moment.
There you go.
And it's this just proves how big an idiot I am because it's 2000. 2011. And if I wanted to see that bit, I could get my ass off the couch and go to the computer.
Go to the computer, get it on YouTube,
And find it on YouTube. Like, yeah. I sent these clips to Mike Katziff. I could just do that.
Yeah.
But the first one comes from the film Legend. Why do I do this?
Wow.
This is a silly movie with a vaguely disquieting little half-naked elf boy who has a woman's voice, terrifying. Billy Barty plays a gnome, because what else is Billy Barty going to play? It's directed by Ridley Scott, so it looks great.
Isn't Tom Cruise the hero
Tom
of this
Cruise
movie?
Tom Cruise is the hero. Not important. Not important. And there's just, throughout the entire film, there is so much pollen flying through the air. It's like air plankton.
When I try to tell people who've never come to Washington what it looks like when you're in the middle of the cherry blossom celebration and a wind stirs, that is the movie I refer them to.
Exactly.
All right.
So, Mike Katziff hit me 2 times.
I like you, my gifts. Does the gun not please you?
No.
Can you speak so of your bridal gown? I've found my true mate. And you know it.
Now that is the great Tim Curry dressed as a giant lobster, basically.
Yeah, like the giant lobster devil, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Giant freaking horns. But, I mean, his voice is why this film works.
Oh, God, yeah.
And the way he pronounces words. I have listened to this film. I've watched this film many times. Just try to get to the way he says, bridal gown. I could listen to this guy pronounce words for the rest of my life. He's just so great. The other film is also technically a Tim Curry film, but I'll sit through this entire film for this moment.
Yes, I did it. I killed Yvette. I hated her so much. Flames on the side of my face, heaving breaths.
That is the great Madeline Kahn as Mrs. White in the John Landis film Clue, which is funny, but when you go back, it's not as funny as you remember it being.
No.
No, it's longer than you remember it being, but it still has Madeline Kahn.
Parts of it are really funny. But parts of it are really long, and parts of it you sit there and think, I understand how this became a cult movie, but that's partly because people remember the funny parts, not the long parts.
Yes, and internalize the funny parts.
So you should all feel free to come to the blog or to the Facebook page and tell us all about the movies that you can't not watch.
We will get so many good ones on the Facebook page.
We cannot wait. We cannot wait to hear from you. And as always, our final topic is a quick round of what is making you happy this week. Glenn Weldon.
Saturday, May 7th is, once again, Free Comic Book Day.
Yay!
It is the 10th annual Free Comic Book Day, and the premise is deliciously simple. You basically walk into a comic book store on Saturday, May 7th, and they will hand you free comics. Not every store will have all 37 possible free comics that are set aside for this day. Some stores will hand you a pre-selected pack. Some will let you choose the comics that you want. But every year, and this is, I think, the fourth year running, I do a post on the Monkey See blog, which kind of gives you a preview of the all 37 comics. People, I work very hard on this. This takes a long time. And every year, I think it gets read by 3 people. So spend some time.
Go as click it, people.
As you are hearing this, it is on the blog, and Comic Book Day, Free Comic Book Day, is tomorrow.
Yes.
As you're hearing.
Yes. If it's Friday, you know, get yourself ready. If it's Saturday, run, don't walk. And if it's Sunday, you know what? Go by the store. They might have some extras.
Yeah.
This year, it seems like there's a lot more all-ages books. And the thing about Free Comic Book Day, historically, the all-ages books on Free Comic Book Day are the really good picks. You want to look out for a book called Top Shelf Kids Comics. For many reasons, it includes some great creators, but it also contains a story called Pirate Penguin versus Ninja Chicken. And if some small part of you doesn't thrill to that, you and I will not be friends. There are a lot of more licensed property comics this year, which is the bad thing. Because, you know, they're a mixed bag. These are tie-ins to movies or toy lines or whatever. There's one called The Darkness 2, which is, follow me, a comic book prequel to the sequel of a video game that was adapted from a comic.
Wow.
So,
there you go.
Yeah, there. And the other one is another of the many books out there is called Paths of the Planeswalker Volume 2. And I'm just going to read the promo copy because I think it says everything you need to know about this book. Paths of the Planeswalker 2 represents the high-quality storytelling and illustrations readers have come to expect from the world's most popular trading card game, Magic the Gathering.
Oh. What? What?
Wow. So I haven't seen character development like that since Old Maid.
What are you? What is that?
As all the emotional intensity of Euchre. It doesn't make any sense. But so go to the store tomorrow, and here's the thing. Buy something. Yeah. I mean, free comics. Yeah. It's great. Buy something. Ask the clerks. That's what they're there for. That's why going to a comic book store is different from downloading, which you can do more and more nowadays. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tell them the movies, the books, the television shows you like. They will recommend something to check out.
Well, so. And the fact of the matter is everybody thinks that everybody who works at a comic book store is comic book store guy.
Exactly.
And that
right.
is not mm. the case.
That is...
Obviously, I mean, I grew up in the comic book world. Plenty of geeks.
Plenty of geeks.
But they're lovely. Mm-hmm. Comic book people are lovely. Go to your, support your local comic book store, even if it is not Free Comic Book Day. If you're one of those people who listens to this show on Monday morning or mm-hmm. whenever, go support your local comic book
exactly.
store.
Exactly. There's a link on the blog post where you can click it and enter your zip code to find the closest participating comic book store to you. So check it out, people.
So it's freecomicbookday.com?
Yes, freecomicbookday.com. And on Monkey See, you'll also find a primer on a checklist of all 37 comics that will be available.
Outstanding.
Saturday.
Trey Graham, what's making you happy this week?
Fungus.
Okay, Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy?
All fungus? Or?
All fungus. No, not a very particular fungus. I got an email one night late last week as I was headed to bed. This was while Linda was still in London and just greeting the dawn on the morning of the royal wedding. Mm-hmm. And it was from one of the NPR overnight editors who, among other things, is tasked with looking for those little oddball stories that that the hosts on Morning Edition will occasionally mention in what's called the host return, mm-hmm. part of the billboard. So if you heard Morning Edition, I am not positive that they used it. I just remember seeing it in this email, but you might have heard them discuss the discovery of a new species of lichen named for one Alfred Ernie Schuyler, who is the emeritus curator of botany at the Academy of Natural Sciences.
I feel like we're getting farther away from this.
Getting there. Getting there. He is a world-renowned expert on rare plants, and he is reported to feel highly honored despite the fact that, and this is the part that is making me happy, people, Vesdea scaleriana, named for this man, is barely visible, and it is so rare that it is known to exist only on a single boulder in central Pennsylvania.
So what's making you happy this week is a rare, invisible fungus.
On a rock.
On a rock in
Pennsylvania.
Because you just like the fact that somebody would go to the trouble.
To find it and name it. And that there's a guy who's happy about this. I love that.
And that guy is you.
Yeah. Well, that makes two of us.
Are you punking us, Trey Graham?
No. This is totally real.
Very good. Fungus is making Trey Graham happy this week. Stephen Thompson, beat that.
Well, I took my family to Dave and Buster's.
Yes, you did.
I sure did. Loved it. Several anniversaries. NPR, as on mm-hmm. the day that we are recording this very podcast, NPR turns 40 years old. And one of the things that is making me happy is that there is an entity that is older than I am. Also, it is the right around the fifth anniversary of my moving to this humble city and
very nice.
This humble organization, and I'm delighted with that milestone. One thing that we have not acknowledged on this podcast, but which will be imminent when it comes out, is Mother's Day.
Mother's Day.
Mothers.
And I think I think I speak for everyone here when I say that all of our mothers are most excellent people. Especially mine.
Mine's better. Sorry, mine's better.
Mike, can we get you to play that little clip of my mother calling me weird?
Yeah, I think that would win. Yeah.
But I think...
My mother would call me weird better than your mother calling me weird.
I think of the five mothers represented in this room, only one of them will be going from comic book store to comic book store on Free Comic Book Day and writing about it.
That's not the only thing there is about mothers.
No,
that
I think
valuable,
that is the metric by which... excellence in mothering is measured. So my mother is the best. But I think what I would ultimately name as the thing that is making me happy is a strange juxtaposition in an ongoing culture war that has bled into politics. And that was the juxtaposition on Sunday night. And we were watching Celebrity Apprentice.
Naturally.
Naturally, right. As one does.
Yes.
And just as Donald Trump announces to the remaining Celebrity Apprentice that LaToya Jackson mm-hmm. will be teaming up to form a sort of super group mm-hmm. with John Rich, Lil Jon, and Meatloaf to take on NeNe Leakes and Star Jones.
Yes.
And Marley Matlin, that Barack Obama, our president, and who has done some battle with Donald Trump, mm-hmm. burst in.
And shunted him aside.
Shunted him aside to announce that Osama bin Laden had been killed.
You know, that's why they timed the raid for that hour.
And I just imagined Donald Trump somewhere tenting his fingers and saying, "You win this round."
Yeah.
So in the same week that Barack Obama released his birth certificate and announced the killing of Osama bin Laden, Donald Trump was having his big moment of bringing back LaToya Jackson. And I just love the idea that there's back and forth.
Yeah.
Those two will be doing battle until Election Day.
I do recommend both The Daily Show and The Colbert Report from Monday night. There was a Stephen Colbert bit where he was sort of talking about the releasing of the birth certificate and sort of saying, I could just imagine him being there like, here's my birth certificate. I bet it's going to be in the news for a long time. So I understand.
So what is making me happy is just the latest chapter
in the ongoing
battle, and I just can't wait to see the next volley.
You bet. What is making me happy this week, it will come as no surprise to anyone that it has something to do with being in London, and what I'm going to cite is British game shows, which if you ever are surprised that we get imports of British game shows, you wouldn't be if you saw how many they have. Primetime British TV is lousy with game shows. I'm telling you, if they're not running like Glee, they're running game shows. And the two that I would cite, there was one that is called Golden Balls. And, get your mind out of the gutter, Trey Graham. There is apparently a nude game show, but I did not see that. In Golden Balls, there's the whole complex thing that involves you have to reveal amounts of money and then lie about it. And then later there are questions. It's so complicated. And then there's betting and gambling, and there's some sort of sort of prisoner's dilemma. And it's you get to the end.
Lichen involved?
you feel like you've been on a magical journey of invisible fungus. Not really. That one was something very special. And even more special was Sing If You Can, which is a show where I believe they are minor celebrities, although I did not recognize them. Come on, and they have to sing while being subjected to some sort of physical challenge. So there was, for instance, a guy who had to sing I'm Still Standing by Elton John while jumping on a moon bounce and being attacked by gymnasts that were and various acrobats flying by him doing cartwheels and round-offs, and he's bouncing on the thing.
Round-offs. The most challenging of gymnastics.
And then there was a woman who was trying to sing Respect while guys on stunt bikes were jumping over her. It was maybe the strangest thing ever, but my favorite part about it was that I was able to tweet, why am I watching a game show where a guy is singing Elton John while being attacked by acrobats? And somebody was like, oh, that's probably Sing If You Can. And I just thought, I love you, Twitterverse.
I love Twitter.
You're excellent.
Oh, we're totally going to put clips of those, if we can find them, on the blog and the Facebook, right?
I will try to find them. So that's what's making me happy this week, British game shows. And that's it for Pop Culture Happy Hour this week. I'm glad that all of you guys can be here.
Always a pleasure. Hey, you stole my line.
Yeah. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me and the blog at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Glenn at G-H Weldon. That's W-E-L-D-O-N. You can follow Trey at Trey Graham. That's Trey with an E and Graham like the cracker. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N. You can follow our esteemed producer, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff. That's K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music. You're listening to it right now. And we hope that all of you will be with us on Facebook and on the blog. And we will see all of you next week.